1:35 on the afternoon of Monday, February 28, 2011. We have a quorum to conduct business. Senator McGuire is here, Senator Pascan, myself, Senator French. We have two bills in front of us today, SB 30, dealing with the return of seized property, and SB 61, the revisor's bill. Let's go ahead and start with SB 30 by Senator Dyson. I see he has his staff, Mr. Kopp. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you for hearing the bill.
Pleased that all of you have quite a bit of education and experience with the law. I've worked quite a bit. I'm sorry, Senator Dyson with me as my chief of staff, Chuck Kopp.
Excellent.
Since I've been here on the whole concept of restorative justice and trying to restore a victim to her pre-offense condition, if possible. The issue before us is what happens when a victim's property is in the custody of the law enforcement, and how do they get it back? And our laws are actually pretty good. If you look at them, it certainly provides for it. There's chain of custody, photographs, fingerprints, or whatever necessary, but the provisions are there to get the property back. I'm told that sometimes the property is kind of withheld as a part of gamesmanship to force a negotiation with the defense attorney or whatever and so on, but the victim gets left out in the cold sometimes. And to their credit, I've never heard any evidence that that's been a problem with the troopers. But I got started on this when a guy I know who's a custom boat builder was building a $300,000 commercial vessel. A couple guys come in to talk about business, and that night, $40,000 worth of electronics disappeared out of the shop floor. And he's smart, got out there and started going to the hawk shops and Craigslist and found about half of it, and then so on. But it's all disappeared into the police's evidence custody, and he had to go out and buy it all again. And Pam Cook, when she was drafting this thing for me, told me a story here at Juneau of a single mother. Her vehicle was involved and was stolen from her. She was 2.5 years getting it back, you know, which was a problem. Senator Pascavane, you're going to hear this all for the second time, and I apologize. But amongst dirt moving contractors that I know in the Anchorage area, some of them have kind of given up on calling the cops when they lose a piece of equipment. They get their buddies and somebody with a plane and fly around and find it and then go get it rather than have it tied up. Of course, for a dirt moving contractor, not having the equipment and a job that's running. And if you look at the law, you'll see that a few years ago, on a very specific issue, we went into the law and said, it's a fisherman's nets. He gets them back right away, you know, because he needs it for his business. And you'll see, I think in your packet, defense attorney in Anchorage has said he had a family that owned a jewelry business. They got roused in the middle of the night. Cops came down, took $3,500 worth of jewelry, and this attorney said it's been how many years?
About 4 years
that he's been petitioning to get it back, and his client has never been charged, you know, and so on and so forth. So they were bugged, bothered about it. And for small business people, you know, even $3,500 out of your inventory can be a problem. And then we've also heard from small business owners when their business computers get taken. You know, and in this day, they're out of business. I mean, that's their accounting, that's their client list, and all that kind of stuff. You'll see this letter from the Home Builders Association. Same thing. It's difficult. And I suspect that there's some police forces around the state who are good at it, at getting it back, and it's high on their priority list. And certainly, we've heard examples, and a surprising number from people that we didn't solicit, saying, you know, we need to do this. Also, the Office of Victims' Rights apparently has had quite a few inquiries and asked for help about it. We may hear from Trooper Rodney Dial, who's the top guy in the troopers here in Southeast, and he testified before state affairs and said, this is not a problem. And he doesn't know that it's been a problem for property crimes in his jurisdiction. So that's kind of what I have to say about it. My friend and chief of staff here has been a law enforcement officer for 25 years, former chief of police in Kenai, and he can answer all your questions far better than me.
Thank you, Senator Dyson. And before we turn to Mr. Kopp, I'll let the committee know we do have Rodney Dial from the state troopers on the phone to answer questions, and we have Victor Kester from the Office of Victims' Rights who will testify here in just a little bit. But let's go ahead and turn to Mr. Kopp. Anything else you want to add to that good presentation by Senator Dyson?
Thank you, Chairman, Senator French. Senator French, I know that you have seen this bill before in a different form. I would just add that the main difference before you this year is the intermediary that's been placed in the process of the Office of Victims' Rights, primarily to be the interface between the person claiming property, answering questions, sometimes a lay person without knowledge of what types of property may be released when. The OVR is in a great position to explain our Code of Criminal Procedure. Particularly, we did change the law last year with biological evidence, all the crimes of homicide, all their various degrees, sexual assault first and SAM first. We have made specific requirements that we're going to hold on to that for 50 years if we don't have a suspect or if the investigation is ongoing. So they can vet those, make sure they're not frivolous. If they can show a claim to property and the law enforcement agency does not show otherwise that they're not able to, OVR then is able to make that request for hearing, giving the agency then 10 days to request the court for a hearing. The court, of course, can calendar that at their convenience, but at least it gives those victims a voice in the process and an opportunity for judicial intervention in cases where there does not seem to otherwise be resolution in getting property back to them.
Thank you. I have a question, and maybe this came up in the last hearing. On page 2, lines 23 and 24, you're defining a crime victim to include any person who's the owner of property that's in the custody of a law enforcement agency. Frequently, the person that has property in the custody of a law enforcement agency is someone I like to call the defendant. And so I'm just wondering whether we're not lumping all defendants, potentially making all defendants crime victims by operation of your definition.
Good question, Chair. The reason why we did that is because currently in the OVR statutes, they weren't able to identify clearly that in these cases where property owners who were not charged, they were innocent parties of crimes, that they could reach out and assist them. So we had to include in their authority to identify that class of people as a crime victim that they could assist. If your property is in the custody of a law enforcement agency, by virtue of that, you can be considered a victim. Now, if you're a suspect or a defendant in the case, there's clear rules of criminal procedure that the OVR will be able to explain to those people, saying, you know, we're not going to request a hearing because here's all the reasons in the law why they cannot give you your property back. And so in those situations, they would help vet those. But they had to be identified as a class that OVR can act for in the statute.
And I guess we can trust the Office of Victims' Rights to know the difference.
I believe they're right. They've been doing good advocacy with respect to the law for a number of years now, and my experience is that we can.
Right. Senator Passman.
If the defendant was the one asserting the property rights, then they would have to waive their right to remain silent to participate. So it may be a problem, as long as they're a defendant, for them to assert those property rights. So just...
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll hear from Mr. Kester, but I guess I would just be concerned with him being pestered by requests from defendants saying, hey, look, I'm a victim. They got my property. Help me get it back. We'll talk some more about it, unless you have more on the point.
Yeah, I was going to say that possibility exists that a defendant would come asking for property back, but a defendant who is charged And with a hearing pending, mm-hmm. is not going to be allowed under current law to receive property back because it is evidence of a crime. If as long as the Department of law enforcement agency don't agree to that, they say no, you are the defendant. Then if the one of the advantages of having the OVRB the intermediary is there's not an automatic request. That's able to be filed. The OVR can say no under the current circumstances. We're not going to request law enforcement for that hearing because, as you point out, Chairman, you are a defendant in the case and it's early.
Yeah, and I should have begun by saying I do think that's a good idea. I mean, I just like the idea of having OVR sort of be the clearinghouse for these. I can't imagine they're going to happen very often. The person who is the victim of this sort of issue needs help. OVR seems like a great organization to provide that, so I think it's a good innovation. Let's welcome Senator Wilikowski to the committee. Senator Dyson.
Our original version that we were promulgating this year did not have the OVR as the referee in the center of this. That was a response to Department of Law's concern that would be overburdening the judicial department. We may hear today of a different opinion on that.
Excellent. We're on SB 30, Senator Wilikowski, a bill you heard in the State Affairs. And further questions for the bill sponsor or his able staff? I don't see any. Let's turn to Mr. Kester, who's now got a new job, or may have if this bill passes. Victor Kester, are you on the line?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Please put yourself on the record and tell the committee your thoughts on this bill.
Good afternoon, respected members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. My name is Victor Kester. I serve as the Executive Director of the Alaska Office of Victims' Rights. I hereby testify in support of Senate Bill 30. This bill provides crime victims of theft a mechanism to reasonably gain custody of their property during the course of a criminal prosecution. The bill enables a crime victim to request a court hearing to seek release, if appropriate, of his or her property recovered by law enforcement but being held as evidence during an investigation. The OVR stands ready and dedicated to serving the Alaska legislature and helping Alaska crime victims. The OVR helps crime victims obtain the rights they are guaranteed under the Alaska Constitution and statutes. The OVR advances and protects these rights when necessary and authorized by law. The OVR seeks to work with criminal justice agencies and other governmental entities in the spirit of cooperation and collaboration to help crime victims and promote the interests of justice. It is a privilege and honor to testify before the respected members of the Senate Judiciary Committee in support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kester. And Mr. Kester, did you hear our earlier discussion of the definition of crime victim on page 2 of the bill?
Yes, I did.
And do you see that definition posing you any difficulty when it comes to screening cases and making decisions about which to pursue and which not to pursue?
I am looking at the bill. Crime victim includes any person who is the owner of property that is in the custody of a law enforcement agency.
And I guess as you're looking at that and thinking of that, I'm considering an amendment, and I'll work with the sponsor, of course, and other members of the committee, just considering an amendment to that language that says, but does not include the defendant in a criminal case, just to be sort of belt and suspenders clear about it.
I think that would be an appropriate consideration. However, I will note that we are often called upon at the Alaska Office of Victims' Rights to make determinations about who we can help and who we cannot help under the rubric of the Alaska Constitution statutes as well as administrative code. And there have been instances where defendants will try to seek assistance from our office, and we clearly have to say, no, you're a criminal defendant. We don't help criminal defendants, and I have confidence that our advocates and and that can make the appropriate call in terms of being certain not to use Senate Bill 30 as a way to help defendants get property that the crime, that law enforcement is holding in order to prosecute them. However, that if you know, those assembled feel that, you know, that additional language, you know, specifies and clarifies the intent of this legislation, frankly, I don't see a problem, and I would defer to the wisdom and guidance of this committee.
We will kick it around. I'm sure you're accustomed to working, you know, in domestic violence situations. Of course, you frequently have two people claiming to be wronged. And so it's I'm sure something your agency's gotten accustomed to is working through those tangled issues. So it's just something I'll ponder. Other questions from members of the committee for Victor Kester? Senator Dyson has a comment.
Yeah, Mr. Kester, in another life, I've been in situations where the cops weren't always the good guys, and I've been in situations where the cops seized property of the perpetrator that had nothing to do with the crime, kind of another way of sending a message and or punishing the guy. And I'm thinking of a craftsman's tools, and he may have been guilty of a crime, but not really related to his tools, and he's out working on bail, waiting trial. And I'm just wondering if excluding the defendant's property that may have nothing to do with the crime, excluding his chance of getting it back, serves everybody's best interest. Have you thought of that aspect, sir?
Well, thank you, Senator, for your guidance. I think that the purpose of Senate Bill 30 allows a mechanism for an individual to address the court if they make a threshold showing under the Alaska statute that their cause is appropriate to move forward to the next level. The OVR functions as a clearinghouse to essentially determine who makes that threshold requirement. So in the instance, the hypothetical that you posed, Senator, the OVR can make that determination and say that the individual's tools are being held by law enforcement, but those tools being held have nothing to do with any crime that he or she may be being prosecuted for. Therefore, the release of those tools is appropriate. And if law enforcement has a position against what the OVR has a position against, there's a mechanism where we all can go to the court and, again, ask a judicial officer, judge, you know, his or her perspective on the matter. So, and frankly, I think the elegance of the law, Senate Bill 30, is that it has a clearinghouse function. It has kind of an efficiency function in that there's a 10 days, we can request a hearing. And if there's a disagreement between the criminal justice agencies involved, the defendant, the person, when I say the defendant, the person under your scenario, Senator, we could all go to the court and have an opportunity to have a meeting of the minds sorted out.
Thank you, sir.
Right. I think Senator Dyson is making the point, and so is Mr. Kester, that even if we inadvertently adopt too broad a definition of crime victim, nothing's automatic about this bill. It all just winds up in front of a judge. And
right. And I think that Senator Dyson's comments guide us well, and that there needs to be a mechanism whereby people whose property may or not be righteously held by law enforcement, criminal justice agents, etc., in connection with a criminal prosecution, individuals may need an expedited process to get access to those. And the situation that I've seen in my work is the laptop computer. That a laptop computer can be held for a long period of time, and then the value of the machine declines in value substantially. The information that is on the machine cannot be withdrawn. And then the small business owner is really put in a serious bind professionally.
It's good, good point. Other questions or comments for Bill Sponsor, Victor Kester, or a question for Rodney Dial? I'll just ask, Trooper Dial, are you on the phone?
Mr. Chairman, I am online.
Welcome. The bill sponsor, Senator Dyson, said in his opening remarks that this is generally not a problem with the state trooper offices that you're familiar with. Why is that? Are you just have you guys got better policies about getting property back, or you don't have room to store it, so you want to give it back, or maybe you can just give me a little bit of an overview of how why it's working well for the troopers?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Rodney Dial. I'm a lieutenant with the troopers in Pecan. The department does not anticipate any concerns with Senate Bill 30. It's been the standard practice of the department for at least the 20 years that I've been with the department, that we promptly return and dispose of all evidence retained in our facilities. Currently, in those few cases in which a person seeks to have property returned that we feel should be retained, we currently just contact the district attorney's office and determine if there's other options available, such as taking photographs or, getting a stipulation or something of that nature. So based on my experience working with all over the state and many detachments, we are able to virtually work out all of these situations with property owners. And we have definitely made a strong effort over the last decade or so to really tighten up our evidence facilities and just make sure that we're getting that evidence in and out just as quickly as possible. So as soon as we get the disposition back from the district attorney's office, we're disposing that evidence. And we certainly support the intent of the bill, and we have no concerns with it.
Good testimony. Thank you. Further questions for don't see any further questions. Thanks so much. We do have one other witness who wants to testify, and that's Les Siren from the Siren Law Offices. If you can hear my voice, go ahead and put yourself on the record.
Hello, this is Les Siren. I'm on speakerphone with my client here. Can you guys all hear me?
We sure can.
Great. My name's Les Siren. May I proceed?
Please.
I'm an attorney here in Anchorage, Alaska, and I'm here with a family member from my clients. The client runs a jewelry store. Sir, could you introduce yourself, please? There's the microphone right there.
Hi, my name is Long Lam. I'm a son of Lai Lam, owner of a jewelry store.
Here in Anchorage.
Okay, could you just have that witness spell the last name, please?
L-A-M.
Lam, thank you.
Yeah, L as in Lester, A as in Apple, and M as in man. So your family back in 2007 was running a jewelry store on Northern Lights in Anchorage, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and then the police called you down in the middle of the night.
Whoa, Mr. Siren?
Yes.
Mr. Siren? You know, that's just an awkward format for us to cope with over the telephone. Either you can make a statement or Mr. Lam can make a statement, but the back and fire question and answer is just not a format. I know it's a very familiar court format, but it's not one that we use much here in the legislature.
Sure. How about I'll just ask him to give his recollection of that night, what happened, just a quick little summary.
Fair enough.
So I got a call giving my family to get down to the jewelry store at around midnight, 11:55 p.m. At night, and we went out there, and they had a warrant. They had us open our safe and everything. It was related to a burglary, so they got us to open everything up. They seized about 50 of our items. It was worth around $5,000 to $10,000 worth, and they've just been having it for a really long time, and nothing's getting done about it so far.
Okay, can the committee hear me?
Sure. Is it, we're back to Mr. Siren. Yep. Go ahead.
Yes, and I will continue to let you know of a few other things. The value of the property that the police seized was between $5,000 and $10,000.
some of this was merchandise that was on layaway, meaning that the client had said, I want to buy that gold necklace or whatever, had been making monthly payments, and now all of a sudden that merchandise was no longer there, and my clients didn't know how long this was going to take, but it went on long enough so that the customers had to be given back their money and told that they wouldn't be able to keep, my client had to tell them they wouldn't be able to keep their end of the bargain. So this was, I think, in May of 2007. In approximately June, if I'm not mistaken, I wrote a letter to the Anchorage Police Department asking, you know, what was going on, and did not receive any response. I actually asked them if they could return the items as soon as they were free of them or didn't need them anymore. Then in February this year, I wrote to the police chief, Mark Mew, asking him, it was about mid-February, prior to the last hearing on this bill, asking if he would be able to assist us in getting the return of the property, and I haven't heard from him yet either. My clients have a friend of theirs, an attorney friend of theirs by the name of Rex Butler. He wrote to the attorney general and discovered there was a case related to this. I did not know about this when I testified. The case is on appeal, and the AG wrote Mr. Butler and said, we'd like to keep this evidence. We're going to keep this evidence, whether you want to or not, because the appeal has not run its course of the criminal matter that's born out of this. My clients have nothing to do with the criminal matter. They haven't been charged with anything. It was just that the evidence, the jewelry in question, somehow wound up at their store and was seized. So that's some new information that I have, that there is a case related to this. Nonetheless, this seems to be a situation that might fall under the category I mentioned by the trooper who testified, Trooper Dial, who testified previously, namely that perhaps we could take pictures of the jewelry, somehow enter into some kind of stipulation as to its value or ownership or things like that, that whatever is needed in order to fulfill the requirements that either side, that the defendant has in order to prove its, whatever his defenses, or the state, whatever prosecution claims that they have, and yet let my client get his property back. Otherwise, he's being forced to unilaterally make a loan in the form of a $5,000 to $10,000 amount of merchandise without any interest, and that goes on indefinitely. So that's all I had. If I'm open to any questions, but otherwise I'll stand by and listen to the rest of the testimony.
That's interesting. Very surprising to me. The property has been held by it for over 3.5 years. I won't speak about your case, but I could, from my own perspective, can only imagine that would take place if you hadn't been able to ascertain who the real owner was. I'm not saying that pertains to your situation whatsoever. So it's just more of a comment on my part than asking you for a response. But again, that's something that the putative owner, the district attorney's office, and the court can figure out. If you can't figure it out, that you haven't won by a preponderance of evidence, the stuff sits there. But there should be some process. So thank you for the testimony. Anyone else?
I'm sorry. I heard thank you for the testimony, and then I couldn't hear anything else.
That was it. Nope, just thank you for the testimony. I appreciate you taking time.
Okay. May we be excused then?
You sure may.
Thank you.
Anyone else online who wants to testify about SB 30? Anyone else in the room here? That I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. And we will give the bill a sleep or two and make sure we're squared away on the definition of crime victim and then bring it back up at in the near future. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up is SB 61, the revisor's bill, which has already had some tweaks made to it in the State Affairs Committee. I'm jealous. Welcome to the committee.
Bill does his work.
Bill does do his work. Please put yourself on the record, and we'd be happy to hear about your revisor.
I'm Catherine Kurtz. I'm an assistant revisor of statutes with Legislative Legal, and this is the revisor's bill. We have a second revisor's bill that's actually in the House that deals with one specific section of criminal law. We're dealing with that separately because we want everybody involved with criminal law to notice it, pay attention to it. We don't want it lost in this. The revisor's bill is something called for in statute, AS 0105036, and the purpose is to correct or remove deficiencies, conflicts, obsolete provisions in the statutes, and to otherwise improve the statutes. So it's aimed at revising rather than changing policy. The bulk of this year's bill has to do with one change. The bill is 46 sections. 20 of those sections have to do with the administrative director of the Alaska court system. All we're doing there is making references to the title of that position consistent. The position's established in the Constitution, but the title is not, and so we're switching to what the court system itself prefers throughout the statutes. And we've checked with Christine Johnson on that, so that one actually covers all three branches. That was suggested by the AG's office. Other than that, we have some name changes. That's five sections, a couple of federal statutes that have been renumbered. Sheldon Jackson College, unfortunately, is going away, so we're removing references to that. There are some obsolete date references and a few other miscellaneous things. I'm happy to answer questions about any of the changes being made.
Thank you, Ms. Kurtz. I frequently do make a stress test on a couple of references. I check the reference to the United States Code in Section 45. Looks right to me. Check the reference to the statute in Section 16 to the Corporate Code. Looks right to me. I have one question about on page 2, Section 4, about the International Conference of Funeral Service Examining Boards. It used to refer to a Conference of Funeral Service Examining Boards in the United States. Are you going all international on us over there at the Revisor's Office, or what's happening?
Well, they, as a matter of fact, did that themselves, adding that word international in front. They did it in 1997, so we're not being rash about this. It's been this way for a while, but we just thought we'd Honda call them what they're calling themselves.
For what it's worth, I went to Google, typed in Conference of Funeral Service Examining Boards in the United States, and when I got done, I was there at the International Conference of Funeral Service Examining Boards, so it does seem to be some relationship between the two entities. Further questions? Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Catherine, we took out the provision on vulnerable adults, which you had thought was a substantive change. And there's some bills working their way through the legislature dealing with vulnerable adults. And I was wondering if you think that we should go ahead and put those changes in those bills that are currently working their way through the legislature.
You know, that section, which was formerly Section 3 of the bill, I think is confusing as it is, because it's talking about elderly and disabled on the one hand, and then it's referring to 4717, I think it is, which is all about vulnerable adults. So I think it is confusing. That comes up in two places in the Alaska statutes, and I think that a substantive bill dealing with vulnerable adults would be a more appropriate place for that change. Initially, I thought it could be done in this bill, but after looking at it, I decided it might involve policy because there's an exception to the single subject rule for bills revising the statutes. It would not be good to put those changes in this bill because there should really be notice if it could be interpreted as a policy change, and that one could conceivably, because it's not 100% clear why those terms are different. But yes, that is a problem in the statutes that's not readily resolved by the revisor's bill, and so it would be clearer, I think, and easier for users if it were resolved in the context of a substantive bill.
But there are currently some substantive bills before this committee dealing with vulnerable adults. And
yes, there are bills dealing with vulnerable adults. And I'm not the drafter on those bills, so I can't give you specific advice on, you know, how they fit, whether you need a title change, any of those finer points. But generally, mm-hmm.
So just so I'm clear, that was something you took out in State Affairs that was in this bill.
Right.
It's not looking for a home.
And it deals with vulnerable adults, and we happen to have a bill.
We do. We do. We do.
Right now. So.
Okay. You'll just bring those to our attention or staff to staff. That's great. Just one more quick question. Section 10, page 5, the phrase on line 10 and 11 used to say engage a financial advisor to annually report on the investment performance of the fund. You're suggesting that we now say report annually. Are we setting up a verb, adverb, war within the statutes, or what do you see happening there?
Our legal editor's preference is that we avoid split infinitives, so that's what we're trying to do in this case.
Unsplit the infinitive. Report annually. Very good. Wow. You guys are the masters. Yeah. That's why you're there and I'm over here. Further questions for the ever-astute Ms. Kurtz and her team?
I'll just say I don't think I've ever had a bill dealing with split infinitives.
Well, this is quite privileged. This is why we have these jobs.
Kurtz going back to junior high school.
Yeah, it sure does.
It's good. It's very good. Further questions? Hearing and seeing none, we'll hold the bill over to make sure we've all had a chance to sleep on it. Thanks so much for being here today. If there's nothing else to come in front of the committee, we'll go ahead and adjourn.